And do you know how many people would probably, like, run away at the sight of dismembered legs?
Yeah. Dude, there's a 4-foot bong and a bag of wheat by your bed.
Chili Wings, the parlor game for nerds, is nearing extinction.
It's in my pot! It's in my pot!
I will find proof.
I'm very easily startled, Mr. Fingerman. I don't know which regulation body would regulate the penis ring that you were talking about earlier.
I'm ready to remain conscious as we record this show.
Hey, welcome to Medical Stuff. My name is Mark. I could go for a fix right now, Frankum. And that is Chris. You are part of the problem, Finkston, over there. How are you doing today, man?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing okay.
Oh, God. So, yeah.
So, Chris is having a rough week, I got to tell you.
It has not been the greatest.
It's, as an example, we where we record, Chris very diligently puts up some sound.
I put some acoustic material on the wall
to help. Yeah, and they have almost all fallen off during preparing.
And it's just because one of those things. Because I need more tape to hold them up, and I was going to go get more tape, but then I found out that my truck
is having issues.
Yeah, and so was enough issues to the point where I really can't drive it. So I don't have that.
He could have contacted somebody.
Hmm? What do you mean?
Who was coming over this evening?
I could have.
And said, hey, can you pick up this kind of tape for me?
Considering how long it took you to pick up the pizza, I figured I didn't want to starve to death.
Okay, first of all, fuck you. Second of all, I had another errand to run. What errand was that, Chris?
That would be to get my wallet, because in addition to the other shit this week, I left my wallet at work.
Okay, did you leave it at work, or did it fall out of your pocket at work?
I just don't think these details matter.
And how did it fall out of your pocket at work, Chris?
So here's the thing. I keep my wallet in on my pants pocket. I keep
your BDU pocket on the right side.
Yeah. On the
BDU is the one that's down on the thigh.
Yeah. You know, and that's where I keep it. And it makes it really accessible.
Mm-hmm.
But it has one major flaw. And that is when you are reclining in the ambulance and if you tuck your feet up like I commonly do, which I actually haven't done in a long time purely because I'm not that limber anymore.
Right.
It tends to make the pocket opening, which is normally facing up, face down, which means your wallet tends to slide right out.
Now, is this the first time this has happened to you, Chris?
Yes.
And is that a lie?
That is a lie.
When Chris and I worked together many, many years ago, this was actually a common occurrence. So basically what I'm hearing is a flat learning curve.
Yeah.
So have you actually looked in your wallet?
No, I can't look at my wallet currently without a little bit of effort. Because some of my friends at work decided that when they found my wallet, which was nice of them, that they would laminate the whole thing shut.
Oh, they went beyond that.
Well, yeah, I haven't gone beyond the lamination.
Mm-hmm. You want to know what's on the inside?
What's on the inside?
Mm-hmm. They have laminated each individual credit card.
Damn. Well, they went really far.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Everything inside your wallet is individually laminated, and then the entire wallet was laminated. Preserved. Perfectly preserved.
Preserved. I appreciate the level of protection that they've done to make sure my wallet's safe.
And they were very serious about the protection because they thought about putting a condom in there for you.
And they just couldn't find a condom because we're all a bunch of old married men.
Right.
We haven't used – yeah.
Yeah. So.
A bunch of old married men with vasectomies. That's pretty much the supervisory staff where we work.
So this has been Chris's week.
Yeah.
Anyway, this evening we're going to be talking about
pain control.
Controlling of the pain.
Yeah. So this came up. The reason I want to do this is I ran a call recently. This was a trainee. He was in his
How recently?
Very recently, within the last week.
Okay.
This is a trainee. And I will tell you this. I enjoy my current job as a supervisor. I really do. It has challenges that just aren't available in other positions.
Like keeping a hold of your wallet.
Well, no. I've had that challenge at all levels. But it was really – it's a good job. But I will tell you this. My favorite job that I've ever had, hands down, has been being an FTO, which is what Mark currently is. It's just kind of one of those things that it's one of those things you wake up in the morning and –
you zippity dude out the front door, jumping up and clicking your fucking heels.
But you do, and you're excited about having a new trainee, and it makes you a better paramedic, I've always felt.
Well, I think you'll agree with this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a better paramedic than you.
Oh,
no, I think you'll agree with this.
I would
rather work with a green, enthusiastic person then some old crusty experienced burnout.
You'd rather work with anybody that's not you, essentially. I'm joking.
Yeah, pretty much.
But yeah, because it's one of those things where it also keeps you kind of smart. Because they're going to ask you a lot of questions that you're really going to need the answers to.
That would make up a lot of bullshit.
Yeah, absolutely. So it gets you good at either of those things, which to me are both vital skills.
No, they ask great questions and questions that you would never think of on your own.
Right, exactly.
And so it makes you stop and think about what they've asked you. And that, and I like seeing the aha moment where they get something.
I'm going to apologize to everyone. If this one is a little, this particular episode is a little excessively echoey, which I think it might be, it's because the acoustic foam has pretty much fallen off the walls.
Right.
And now the sound's just bouncing back. And quite frankly, at this point, I'm going to go with fuck it. We're just going to record this as is.
So, but anyway, we do Trini.
Care about you.
Of course.
Yeah. Anyway, so we go on a call. Turns out this is a frequent flyer, which I actually knew it was a frequent flyer the moment we walked in the house, given this was not the same house that this person lived in. I hadn't seen this person for a while, but I knew it was them because the chief complaint is abdominal pain, the age of the person, and the fact that I am fairly certain I got high just walking in the house. It was just, I mean, just reeked of weed.
High enough that you didn't realize that you were high.
Right. Until later on when I'm like, why do I want Doritos? But anyway, so we go there. And the reason that I was kind of inspired to do pain control is because I really applauded my trainee because he did really, really well in terms of not just jumping straight to wanting to do narcotics. Because a lot of providers kind of get to this thing of, I'm either going to give narcotics for pain control or I'm going to do nothing for this patient at all.
Right.
And it seems to be either one or the other. Either I'm going to sit there and tell them like, oh yeah, no, we're almost to the hospital, or I'm going to give them narcs. And this trainee did a really good job. Well, first he did a really good job on his questioning of trying to figure out where her pain was coming from. He didn't know her. So I could have said,
her head.
Yeah. But you know, good looking out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, where she's going, you know, have you had any urinary problems? Like he's really good investigating skills. Then he gets back there and the first thing he does is he starts trying positioning. You know, are there different positions that can help you get more comfortable? And she was like, yeah, well, we'll try this. She did those things. The second thing he did after that was he tried using hot and cold compresses. See if those things would help. And so
– BLS before ALS.
Yeah. And then he moved on to Ketorolac, which is a hell of an NSAID. Or well, it's an anti-inflammatory. It's Toradol. Yeah. It's Toradol. It's an anti-inflammatory. A hell of a good one. And he did that, and by the time he was done with that, we were at the hospital. And so he did a really good job of avoiding the straight jump to narcotics, but he also treated his patient really, really well. And I was very impressed by it. And so,
now, was this much to her frustration because she was wanting narcotics?
Ultimately, I think, yes, it was, but she did not display that frustration because I think in the past she has displayed that frustration and has not been met with solid results.
Right.
So, anyway... So, yeah, that's why we're going to talk about pain control a little bit. And it's kind of hard to talk about pain control nowadays without talking about the opioid crisis. At least.
What crisis?
The opioid crisis.
Is this new?
No, actually, we've talked about it in previous episodes. If you'd like, go back and check out our opiates episode. Mm-hmm. I think even our street drug. Our street drugs episode, I want to say, even has a little bit of info on it. With the opioid crisis in the U.S. being front and center, we spend in headlines for quite a while. I feel like every time I'm on Facebook, I scroll past a new article about it. A lot of attention has been placed on pain control and how we manage prescription medications. So drugabuse.gov cites statistics stating that 21 to 29% of patients who are prescribed opioid medications misuse them, which is a huge number.
So is that like inserting them rectally?
No, I believe by misuse they mean overuse.
Oh, got it.
Yeah. Okay. So
nose or something in your ear.
Now, I do want to keep in mind that the statistic is a little bit vague.
Wonky.
Well, I had a hard time finding out how do they define misuse. And I wonder if it's kind of
– it could be rectally inserted and you're just over-assuming their ability to correctly cite things.
Could be underused.
Right.
Could be overused. Could be that they're getting them and selling them to other people. Mm-hmm. You know, like who knows?
I'm going to say drugabuse.com. They're going to say
drugabuse.gov. Yeah.
But – but I'm going to assume they're not really investigating underuse of the opioids that people prescribe.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like, and I'm not going to get political here at all. I have no interest in getting political on this, but it's kind of like, for example, you'll hear like gun crime statistics. Some people say gun crime statistics, and they'll talk about the increase and the decrease based on gun control and that kind of stuff. And oftentimes, gun crime, you have to be careful when you hear someone say that, because gun crime includes everything from using a gun to harm somebody to unlawful possession to, in some states, unlawful storage. Or, you know, like, for example, if you...
It's a broad stroke.
It's a very broad stroke that maybe doesn't have anything to do with actual gun violence.
Right.
And so this could be the same thing, where we're putting a broad statistic in to prove a point. But anyway, I digress. So moving on. There is evidence that overprescribing opioid medication has been a major contributing factor to the opioid crisis. This only shows correlation, though. That's not causation. It's going to be hard to show causation in a case like this. If you want to know more about correlation versus causation, check out our Med Myths episode.
Well, here's a problem with the overprescribing of it.
Mm-hmm.
There has been a big push, which I think this is a good thing overall, in medicine to base reimbursement based upon customer satisfaction.
You mean in terms of like insurance reimbursement?
Insurance reimbursement, Medicare, Medicaid, stuff like that. If you don't have a certain level of customer satisfaction for whatever reason.
Right.
That could affect your reimbursement. Okay. So if you're not. And so one of the problems is that a lot of reimbursement these days is being based upon, especially from like Medicare, Medicaid, is being based upon customer satisfaction.
Oh, yeah.
And so hospitals are trying to figure out ways that if they get low customer satisfaction scores, it can affect the reimbursement.
Right.
And so that coupled with lawsuits.
Right.
Where a doctor refused to provide these things. I mean, it's kind of similar to the overprescription of antibiotics.
Yeah.
In that the patient has an expectation. Oh, I have pain. You have to get rid of it for me. Okay, well, yeah, but there are many things we can do, but they see that they just want the quick fix.
Yeah.
I have a viral infection. I want an antibiotic because I don't understand the difference between a bacterial and a viral infection.
Right.
And
if you would like to.
Right. Listen to medical stuff, viral and bacterial infections. They're both two different episodes. Very informative.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, it's rather than making necessarily decisions in their life that will minimize the pain they have, exercise, you know, lifestyle changes.
Mm-hmm.
They just want that quick fix of a pill and the pain goes away.
Right.
Well, the problem with opiates, they are highly addictive.
And lethal.
Right. So, I mean, you talk about, you know, the prescription of these things. Well, we've set up a culture in our society, in our medical society specifically, that you have to keep the patient happy, even if it's hard truths that they don't want to hear.
Yeah. And so when you're a doctor, or even when you're a paramedic, we're kind of put in this position nowadays where on one hand, you either choose to believe the patient or not, not even believe them, but it's you to give narcotics or not. And the problem is if you don't give them narcotics, you could be liable for their pain and suffering because those lawsuits do happen.
Right. Just the other day, we picked up a guy and he was requesting narcotics.
Yeah.
And my partner was an advanced, so he could start a line. He could do all that kind of stuff. Can't give narcotics. He pops up his head. He goes, hey, this guy's requesting narcotics. No.
Yeah.
I said, I'll come back and explain to him why he's not going to get narcotics. But you can't – it's very difficult to defend subjective reasons.
Right. Well, so here's the thing. I'll complete my sentence here is or complete my thought. That sounded dickish when I said complete my sentence. Mm-hmm. But anyway.
Well, no, I expect it.
Yeah. but so you're in the position of either you don't give narcotics, but then you are in theory and could be liable for their pain and suffering because you didn't treat them, or you do give narcotics. And what's been happening lately is people have been suing physicians for their addiction to narcotics. Mm-hmm. This has actually happened. And so you're really kind of stuck. And this is kind of one of those things where – I feel it's an example. I was going to talk about this later, but might as well hit it now. It's kind of an example of saving the few at the cost of many. And what I mean by that is instead of allow doctors the autonomy to tell a few people no, or to tell people no, you're not getting narcotics. Because here's the thing. What's going to happen is we're going to mess that up. Sooner or later, there's going to be someone where opiate treatment is absolutely appropriate and they're not going to get it because they're going to be essentially falsely thought for seeking of some sort. That's going to happen. It's going to happen no matter what you do. But the problem is to overreact for that, everyone's getting damn narcotics.
Right.
Because we're so worried about the liability, of just those few. So as a result, many, many, many people are getting potentially life-ending addictions to mm-hmm. opiates, as opposed to just being able to tell the few people no.
When there were other choices. I mean, you can take Toradol. It's like Advil on steroids.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very powerful NSAID.
That's kind of weird to say Advil on steroids, but mm-hmm. it's a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory.
Exactly. So, you know, but I mean, that may have worked, but doctors are less likely to go to it
right.
because it's non-narcotic.
Yeah.
And people are less likely to want it.
Right. Exactly. So we'll talk a little bit about why that is as we kind of get into different pain treatments. But yeah, so it's definitely a pickle that we're in. In 2013, there was a study of heroin users. 80% of those heroin users stated that they misused prescription opioids before turning to heroin. So I guess prescription opioids is the gateway drug in this case. And 80%
yeah, so is beer.
Huge, right. Very true. All opioid pain medications have the ability to become addictive, so it has become increasingly important for field providers to explore other means of pain control before jumping to the that's air quotes. Good stuff.
Air quotes are obviously
oh.
There we go.
Okay.
Yeah, there's no whistle in there.
Sorry. Wood. That's like slipping on a banana peel.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. So first, let's talk a little bit about pain causes, diagnosis, and we'll talk a little bit more about prescription abuse. So in 1994, the International Association for the Study of Pain, also known as IASP, defined pain as, and this is an important definition, by the way, as I'm sorry, Mark. I'm just fucking this show up.
You're gonna get sued by the International Association of Verbal Air Quotes.
No, damn it, mm-hmm. them again. You know they are just such bastards.
They're a powerful organization,
and that is the problem with lobbyists. Right there, right there.
You do not want to cross those guys. I'm telling you right
no,
now.
No, seriously.
Chris talking, not me, guys. I'm totally behind your association.
Anyway, so they define pain as. I feel like I can't do it. You fucked that one up too.
I did.
As an unpleasant sensory or emotional experience arising from real or probable tissue damage. So what that effectively says is that pain is an experience, not necessarily a result of a physical problem.
Well, it's also, I mean, an emotional experience. So you're lumping emotional pain
yeah.
in with physical pain.
And we'll talk a little bit about why that is. So pain can be caused in a measurable number of ways.
You'd say what? From the very visible?
Yeah, like fractures, lacerations.
To the hard to find.
Like abdominal pain.
To the nearly invisible?
To nearly invisible.
That's what I said.
Sounds like I said nearly visible.
To the nearly invisible.
Like pain disorders such as fibromyalgia.
Right.
So when an obvious reason such as trauma presents itself, the diagnosis is pretty easy for healthcare providers, and we're more likely to provide opioid pain relief.
That's broke. That looks like it hurts.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, no one's going to be like, yeah, that's a drug seeker right there.
It's usually, at least in the medic's head, it's usually, damn, hey, yeah. You want some pain meds for that?
Yeah, it's an extra knee. But anyway, so, well, and that's true. I mean, a lot of times, yeah, like you see a physical thing in front of you, it's really easy to be like, oh, let's get some pain meds. And it's very likely to provide, we're more likely to provide that.
Mm-hmm.
However, this does seem to make sense initially, but it can be the starting point for addiction as well as a source of, well after the source of pain has been resolved. So discovery of opioid abuse in these patients can also be further clouded because friends and family may not question it due to the recent trauma.
Right.
If someone has a back fracture, their friends and families are probably not going to question their opioid use.
Right.
You know, versus other things might people make, you know, other like nebulous, hard to find things. People are like, okay, no one can really find what's wrong with this guy. Is he abusing it?
Right.
But when you have an obvious back fracture because you rolled an ATV, people don't question that.
Right.
And so that kind of goes on. Chronic pain from trauma may also not be addressed by other non-opioid means due to current opioid use.
Well, we've seen – I mean, there's Vicodin, Percocet, Dilaudid.
Fentanyl.
Norco. Fentanyl patches.
Yeah.
Where this person is on fentanyl 24 hours a day.
Oh, yeah.
They're getting a release of narcotics into their bloodstream. And not only do you have, you know, the physical benefit of the pain, but you also get the high from it.
Yeah.
And when you try and come off of it, you're then not only are you getting used to life without that buffer, but you also have the effects of being addicted to it.
Yeah, and you'll go through withdrawal symptoms as well when that comes off.
Which will intensify your sensation of pain that you're feeling.
You know, it's funny. And this is just anecdotal, Chris. This is not...
People's pain is funny.
Ha, 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 Mark. If I kicked you in the knee right now, you'd know I'd laugh. But anyway, this is just Chris's observations. Not even the opinion of the show.
Oh, sit down, children. Chris is going to tell us his opinion. Gather around.
Quite frankly, you tuned into a podcast with two guys. It's pretty likely that you're going to hear the opinions of them. But anyway.
Gather around, children. Shh.
As if the audience could be loud. Anyway. So, because there is no audience here. But anyway, so.
Depends on what your opinion is.
That's true. So. I totally forgot.
Okay.
So I'm derailed. No, it's coming back. It's coming back.
Now we can see.
Got it. Okay. I got it. All right. It seems to me that the people with the lowest pain tolerance are longtime opioid users.
Oh, yeah.
Especially the ones that are like into heroin and the more hardcore stuff. It's one of those things to where I can almost predict it, and I hate it because I'm going to go to start an IV on them. And every single time, they have worse reactions than children. I've given 8-year-olds IVs, and they have complained less than some of the drug addicts that I've given IVs to. Oh, my God. Do you even know what you're doing? And they get mad, and it's just like, you called me. You called me. It's a needle. I don't know of a comfortable way to put a needle through your damn skin. It just goes in. All right?
The ones I really like are the people that hate the IVs are the people that are heavily tattooed.
Right.
You have full sleeves, which are beautiful.
Yeah.
You've had an entire back tattoo, but you're going to want to go about my 20 gauge?
It's like, you're going to wonder about you literally had a hot needle dragged across your skin for hours. How does this... So that's one of the things, too, is that chronic pain from the trauma may also not be addressed by other non-opioid means because of current opioid use. So, like, you know, if you're already taking the top-shelf stuff, it's really hard to kind of then wean down.
Well, like, so you had, what was it?
Herpes, yeah.
Vicodin.
Right, yeah.
Listen to our sexually transmitted diseases episode, and you'll find that you don't have herpes. You still have herpes. You didn't. It's not past tense.
I don't think I said had, didn't I?
Yeah, you said had.
Oh, no, you said had, then yeah, I said herpes. Yeah. Got it, okay.
So anyway, then you have the pain that is not immediately visible, such as, you know, joint pain, abdominal pain, which is funny because if it's joint pain, then the thing that's probably going to help you is the non-narcotic Toradol.
Right.
You know, abdominal pain, you know, that can be tricky to treat correctly because, you know, you talk about abdominal pain. There are many reasons why you have abdominal pain.
And it
can be very hard to pin down which it is. And there's a lot of, hopefully, moving parts in your abdomen that it's tough. Medical science is not – this is not Star Trek where you just hold a wand over somebody. It tells you exactly what's wrong with them.
I wish it was.
It would be nice. And we'll get there eventually. But, you know, I mean, our CT scanners and our, you know – MRIs and stuff like that are only so fine. And when you start getting down to stuff that's at the cellular level, it's just hard to pin down.
Damn CT, you fine. Sorry.
So then it becomes a judgment call on the point, and this is what Chris was talking about with, you know, the obvious fracture versus not. You know, then it becomes a judgment call on the practitioner's part. And so if you have a practitioner who believes... right or wrong, believes this person, and starts prescribing them daily narcotics or narcotics that they're on all day long because it comes in a patch, you know, then there goes your addiction again.
Yeah.
You know.
I think also, and this is going to be, this is going to sound a little bit like Old Man Murray, because I'm technically not a millennial. I missed it by like 1 year. But you're a millennial. What's that?
You're a millennial.
No, I'm actually a Zenillennial.
No, they made that up. Make you feel better about yourself.
You're ancient, all right? So that's your problem. But anyway,
I'm Generation Y. The hell is he still working here?
Right. actually reminds me of – never mind. Anyway, so I – but it's one of the things that it seems to me that – I don't know. I feel – and again – This is not a measurable thing. This is Chris's ramblings. But I feel like the current generation just isn't, feels that no amount. I feel that society is moving in a direction where no amount of discomfort is acceptable.
Right.
And so, and I think.
If you talk to the older generation.
Yeah.
There's a lot more of just, life is pain, princess.
Right.
You know, and I'm not saying that towards a generation. That's actually a quote from a movie. But, you know, I mean, okay, so I have psoriasis. I have psoriatic arthritis. Mm-hmm. I hurt most days.
Yeah.
You know, something, knees.
How many narcotics are you on?
Zero.
Right.
I take some Advil in the morning.
Yeah.
And I just suck it up and deal with it because I'm going to hurt. Mm-hmm. But you're right. We're moving to a point where any amount of pain is just unacceptable. And maybe we need a little bit more of the, and this I think is probably a uniquely American concept because most of the poor world just don't have access to the medical care that we have.
Right.
And so, yeah, there are huge, huge, huge portions of the world where, you know what? Yeah, you're going to hurt. Doesn't mean you can't work because you won't get food.
Right.
You know, you won't get paid if you don't go out and do the job.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And I don't want to say this as – now, that doesn't mean, though, I don't want to say that everyone experiencing pain just should suck it up. There are pain levels that are too much that do require opioids. Mm-hmm. I always wonder if maybe part of the rise in the opioid if part of the rise in the prescription of opioids is just due to the fact that no amount of pain is considered
You can't have any pain at all.
Yeah.
And that's just not acceptable. It's not a realistic standard by which to. So did you hear about, did you look up the new medication that they just got passed, the new narcotic?
Oh, is this the kappa opioid receptor one?
I know there's a lot of resistance to it.
Oh, yes. Anyway. No, this is a different one. It's basically, it's another opioid medication similar to oxycodone that is, it's just more potent.
No, that's the wrong article. Go on.
Anyway, so abdominal pain. So there are some conditions such as like diverticulitis, for example, that can be objectively diagnosed. But a lot of the problem with pain, particularly with the abdomen, is that it's very difficult to diagnose because there are so many organs and blood vessels and nerves in the abdominal cavity that it can be really hard to pinpoint exactly what's causing the pain. And so physicians must rely on subjective information. So in case you don't know, the difference between objective and subjective information is that objective information is observable. In other words, you do a CT scan, you see on the CT scan, you see a tumor. That's an objective finding. The patient then saying, yes, this tumor causes me pain, that is subjective. So subjective is what you are told is going on. Objective is what you observe. And so that's the hard part with a lot of pain is an absolutely subjective finding. You can't measure pain. There's no pain test out there. So it's just basically what people tell you.
Back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago of it's a subjective thing.
Yeah.
You pick up somebody, you ask people, how many times have you gotten this? Okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, how do you rate this pain? 10's the worst pain you've ever felt in your life. 1's no pain at all. Oh, it's a 12 or it's a 14.
Why aren't you screaming?
Well, no, and it's okay. Well, that's not an option.
Yeah.
Because 10 is literally the highest number you can pick.
Yeah.
You know, if this is the worst pain, I had a partner who wanted to see about getting a study. Mm-hmm. Scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the worst pain you ever felt in your life. How do you rate this pain? 10, stomp on their foot. Compared to the pain in your foot, how would you rate the pain in your chest? Still a 10. Poke them in both eyes. Compared to the pain in your eyes, how would you rate that pain? If it's still a 10, okay, there we go. I routinely ask people, women, how is this pain? Oh, this is pain. This is a 10. And they're laying there, like you said, why aren't you screaming? Or why aren't you laying exceptionally still?
Right.
So what you're telling me is this pain is worse than childbirth. But anyway, so we'll get this all the time. Well, it's a 10. And patients are sitting there calmly, interacting normally, even laughing and joking. I've also had patients, you walk in, you look at them, you're like, oh, that's got to be a 10. just by the way they're acting. You know, they are sitting there. They won't move. They sit and very, very still. They won't let you touch them because it hurts very, very bad. So real quick, the medication that was just passed November 2nd, or earlier in November, was called sufentanil, and it's a sublingual tablet. And there were a lot of concerns by the medical community of this becoming exceptionally addictive. It's also a fairly quick way for it to take effect. And so it was, there was a, I'm trying to figure out exactly who the, so it passed, even though several members of the analgesic and anesthetic and analgesic drug products advisory committee voiced concern over it. And they could be misplaced or lead to accidental exposures, particularly in children because the tablets are so small. So, yeah, this is, but there, one of the things that was brought up I was reading about was they were talking about why in the middle of an opioid crisis.
Right.
Are we approving a medication that's a more potent opioid that's taken in a way that is acting quicker? Why aren't we focusing on other ways of treating the pain?
Well,
gather around, children, for more of Chris's opinion.
Well, I don't know. Like, I understand that. Like, personally, no, I don't think we need yet another opioid pain medication out there. And you really got to start asking what's the benefit of adding another one. However, I don't think the FDA works that way. I mean, I think the FDA basically looks at what's the risk versus benefit for a patient for this drug. Okay, the benefit is this. What is the risk of this? Okay, it's in the same class as any other controlled narcotic. It's passed and approved. I don't think they can say look at it and say, okay, what's the political hot button issue right now? Well, normally, you know, 10 years ago or, you know, 6 years ago, under the same regulations I have now, I would have said yes. But because it's a hot button issue right now, I'm going to say no. I think without having a policy change in place, put in place by politicians, they don't really have a way to fairly say no to that. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, but when you're when your own anesthetic and analgesic drug product advisory committee.
Well, but it's some members of that expressed concerns.
Yeah, but now as well, because it's more, it's also a 10-3 vote to pass it by the same committee, so.
Yeah, so there's probably 3 people had concerns and 7 didn't.
Right, so.
So, I mean, to me, as long as it followed the normal process and the process wasn't. Now, if there was a, you know, if politicians, you know, took action, you know, on opioids by modifying the approval process for opioids and then it still got passed, then yeah, I'd say there's concern. But in this particular case, as long as the approval process remained unchanged, it would be very difficult for someone on the FDA, I would say, to not approve it. That would be that'd be my stance. Like if I was on the FDA, it's like, hey, this is your approval process and it passes that criteria, then just like fentanyl years before it and morphine years before it,
yeah,
it passes.
So, yeah, I guess it probably maybe a change in the procedure of.
Yeah, which probably should have been done. I'm not saying that there wasn't something that could have been done different. I'm just saying it's
right.
To default the agency that approved it now with their current guidelines is kind of.
That's exactly what I'm doing.
Well, I know. I think it's wrong. I'm joking. Anyway. obviously, you're not doing that. But anyway, moving on. So this will kind of segue right into psychogenic pain disorder. So we talked about subjective, how, you know, pain is a subjective deal. And there is something called psychogenic pain disorder, where this is a diagnosis where emotional states and stress lead to the perception of chronic pain. According to a 2008 article in Pain Medicine, a journal about, you might have guessed it, pain. It is a peer-reviewed journal. Opioid prescription in these cases can be dangerous. So depression and anxiety are often at the root of psychogenic pain disorder. So prescribing something that is often abused, that people abuse to treat their depression, can result in addiction or death because of opioid overdose. So this is where we start talking again about doctors absorbing yet more liability. Because on one hand, if someone has psychogenic pain disorder, that's a hard, it's a really hard diagnosis to give somebody. As if you listen to our Munchausen's episode, it's kind of the same thing. What you're doing is you're telling someone they don't really have a medical problem. And ergo, I'm not going to treat your pain like it's pain. Right. I'm going to treat it like it's depression.
Right.
And that's going to run you into some liability if you're wrong. And so because of the way society is right now, you're asking a lot for a doctor to absorb that kind of liability.
Well, because, I mean, what a lot of people don't understand about medicine is that a lot of it's kind of guessing.
A lot of it is guessing.
You know.
I think a lot of people are under the assumption that there's a test for everything. That you right. can test for this, you can test for that. There's very few tests. And sometimes even when there are tests, there's no point in doing them. A good example is norovirus. If you go to the ER or you go to the hospital, mm-hmm. chances are doctors are going to say, yeah, you probably have norovirus. They're not going to, they could test for it, but they're not going to. Because mm-hmm. the problem is whether you have it or not, treatment's the same.
Right.
Fluids and rest. Maybe some Zofran.
Mm-hmm.
Zofran, by the way, is a medication.
Lots of toilet paper.
Yeah. Yeah. Zofran and a prescription of Downy. You know, like it's, I think Downy's paper towels. No. But hey, you know what, man? If it's a heavy enough load.
Downy is a fabric softener.
Oh, shit. Well, hey, you may be doing some laundry, depending on how bad this is. But so that's kind of one of the problems. So I also want to move on to fibromyalgia. So fibromyalgia is a disorder that causes pain along with fatigue and mood instability. And it has been the center of controversy, especially in EMS, I would say. I can't say especially in EMS because I haven't worked in any other industry, but I would say it has been a source of controversy for a long time. And the main reason being is that it's really hard to distinguish it from psychogenic pain disorder. Fibromyalgia, and I still have mixed feelings on it. And fibromyalgia is one of those diseases where the technical definition of it is nebulous. It's assumed by researchers that in fibromyalgia patients, their brain and spinal cord transmits and the brain interprets pain differently than it would in other people. So sensation that normally wouldn't cause pain in Mark and I does cause pain in someone with fibromyalgia. The problem with fibromyalgia is that it's super difficult to diagnose. It's basically diagnosed based on chronic pain throughout the body.
Super difficult or super, super difficult?
Super duper difficult.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. I'm adding the duper to the end of it. There used to be like a tender points test where a diagnosis was given if a patient had like 11 of 18 points in the body that were tender, but that drew a ton of scrutiny because there was little data to support the position of those spots as to like, okay, why these points? There was little data on how to elicit the pain from the spots. Too much pressure in any spot, by the way, will cause pain, whether you have fibromyalgia or not. Exactly. So Mark just punched my leg. Oh, you got pain there? Nah, it shouldn't hurt, sir. Should not hurt.
Did you do the poke the spine test?
I love that. And many of the spots were close together, making it difficult to differentiate pain coming from one spot or another. So there is no objective way to diagnose fibromyalgia, and there is no test for fibromyalgia. Many of the effective treatments for fibromyalgia are also similar to the treatments for psychogenic pain disorder, and that includes exercise and lifestyle changes. I already mentioned that last part. So that's kind of why I think fibromyalgia is the source of a lot of scrutiny and controversy. And kind of one of the side effects, I think, when it comes to both psychogenic pain disorder and fibromyalgia is subjective diagnosis, such as fibromyalgia, because it is based solely on what the patient tells you. There is no objective way to find out if someone actually has a disease process or not when it comes to fibromyalgia. They do test lab tests to rule out other things, but there is no lab test to say if you have fibromyalgia or not. You can't see it on an x-ray. There's nothing. So it is one of those diagnoses that I feel is going to be frequently abused by drug seekers because pretty much all you have to do, especially because the pain criteria is now relaxed, as long as someone insists they have pain, fibromyalgia is a diagnosis that's on the list. Mm-hmm. And so if you're a drug seeker, you're going to insist you have pain. And fibromyalgia specifically, by the way, is pain in the muscles. So like musculoskeletal pain. Well, that's
what fibromyalgia means.
Yeah, exactly.
Muscle fiber pain.
Yeah. And so if someone's not so it wouldn't be like abdominal, like someone's constantly complaining of abdominal pain, that necessarily wouldn't be fibromyalgia, but people who are complaining of like, you know, chronic pain in like their skeletal muscles, particularly the particularly it's like, you know, like lower back, arms, legs, those kind of areas. That's where the fibromyalgia diagnosis comes from. So for someone who wants drugs, pretty much all they have to do is keep insisting that they have pain in those spots.
Right.
And this does a couple problems. One, the person may actually get drugs. And two, it also adds a stigma to those who have legitimate pain, who have a legitimate problem that is causing them pain, that is hard to find. People tend to assume that, oh, well, you know, drug seekers do the same thing that you do. And so I think that kind of, it's one of those things to where it makes it difficult on people who have legitimate pain who are trying to seek treatment, because when drug seekers complain of the same things they do, we tend to lump all of them together.
And what we're saying is, we're not saying that people with fibromyalgia don't have legitimate pain.
We're not saying that at all.
No, we're not saying that. What we're saying is that the system that has been set up to protect the sector of the population that have fibromyalgia are enabling a much larger section of the population that may be drug seeking.
Right. And Stern may say that the most effective treatments, long-term treatments for fibromyalgia is exercise and lifestyle changes. Mm-hmm. And that...
And we're not talking about becoming gay.
No. You know what?
There's wrong with anything wrong with being gay. We're just saying exercise and eat better and lose some weight.
Could you just imagine that someone's it's like, man, dude, I didn't know you were gay. Like, you're attracted to men? No, I'm not, but I got to get rid of this fibromyalgia pain somehow.
A lifestyle change.
So I guess I got to try this.
I Googled that.
Yeah. I listened to this show called Medical Stuff.
Right.
And this is what they told me to do.
They seem to know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
That's a lie, because we really have no idea what we're talking about.
They're funny anyway.
Exactly.
So with that out of the way, let's talk about actually, you know, the subject of the podcast half an hour into it.
Right.
Or, I'm sorry, 44 minutes into it. Controlling pain is a large part of almost any healthcare practice. Actually, that's like most diseases get brought to our attention because they're causing some amount of discomfort.
Right.
So outside of treating the underlying causes, providers can do many things to actually treat the pain itself. And that's from, you know, anything from positioning to medication to relieve pain. Other methods of chronic pain disorders without obvious injury include exercise, lifestyle changes. We talked about that.
Right.
You know, going gay. Anyway,
you know, I was having a lot of pain.
Hey, Chris. I think I sounded like you when I said that too.
Jesse may have a problem with this, but damn it, I'm in pain.
So positioning. God, why does positioning have to be the
So often the first line of pain treatment for us, especially in the field. I mean, you were talking about your partner the other day and how.
Yeah.
Well, we had a lady the other day who fell, and the thing that did the most amount of good for her pain in her back was ice directly placed upon the site.
Yeah. We'll talk about ice and heat compresses here in a little bit and why they work.
But positioning is making sure they're sitting in the position that is most comfortable for them.
Yeah. A lot of patients are going to naturally do it too.
Right. Labor pains can be significantly impacted by positioning. Positions such as squatting can help align the pelvis and the baby. Makes it much harder to catch the child, though.
Yeah, sure does.
And then when the contraction occurs, less force is imparted on the pelvis, thus the pain is felt, you know, less pain is felt by the patient.
Right.
Abdominal pain can be complicated due to the number of potential causes. However, there can be positions that help if the pain is coming from a specific point. For example, a patient with chronic liver disease who also deal with the liver pain may find that laying on their left side is more comfortable. This is because that the pressure of the other organs is no longer exerted on the liver.
Yeah.
For us, you know, it can be as simple as slinging a swath to help hold the arm.
Yeah.
For shoulder pain, or realigning a fracture, not realigning, but splinting a fracture, which we're getting ready to talk about. Mm-hmm. You know, making sure that the bone's not moving around independently of each other.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You look like you're going to say something.
No.
So splinting and positioning go hand in hand. Like Chris and I, when we record this podcast.
We're hand in hand right now.
Hey, look at lifestyle change.
Yay.
Go tell Jesse you loved her.
Wait a second. Back up. Boop.
Boop. Pump the brakes. Much of the pain from a fracture can be a result of the jagged bone ends damaging soft tissue around the surrounding nerves. Putting a patient in a splint or back in anatomical position or position of function or POF can reduce this pain. Once positioned, you know, we'll splint it, and I like how you embolden some things to make sure we don't miss them.
Well, no, I do that just so you don't start reading it.
Oh, okay.
Which apparently doesn't help.
Because I just make reference to it in other
right,
place.
Right, yeah.
So, reducing an angulated fracture.
Yeah, so an angulated fracture, that's like you now have two elbows.
Right.
Like, that's what an angulation is.
In the field, we want to make sure that we try and get things back to POF.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
But there are times when that's not practical.
Yeah.
Angulated fractures would be one of them. Open fractures with the bone sticking out would be another.
Yeah.
And the reason it's not practical is because we can do more damage by getting everything back in place.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's like it's dragging a broken bone in through more soft tissue.
Right.
And you have arteries that go through your limbs. You have nerves that go through your limbs. And so
nerve.
Yeah, the nerve of trying to do that. So the only time really that we're going to attempt to correct an angulation is if we have a lack of, I believe it's a lack of pulse distal to the site of the injury
mm-hmm.
is the only time you
would attempt. If you're not getting blood flow past the point of the fracture, that's a problem because now you're killing all the muscle cells down there. We talked briefly about, I believe we've talked about in the past, mass pants.
Yeah.
And why we don't use them anymore, because that's essentially what you were doing with mass pants is you were restricting the blood flow to the lower extremities, thereby. Yeah, you know, when this happens, what happens is not only are you – when the muscle is deprived of its nutrients like that, it will start trying to find any way to survive.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it'll go out and it'll, you know, make a shiv and it'll rob stuff from the other arm or from the leg, whichever's closest. No, it'll start breaking down its own musculature trying to feed the cells. Well, the problem is that puts off a lot of other – waste product that your body doesn't handle well.
Like lactic acid.
Jinx, you owe me a Coke.
Damn it. I actually already gave you a Pepsi.
I believe I picked it up.
Yeah, I paid for half of it.
Have you?
Not yet. But so I will.
Who's paid for it now, Chris?
I will. Just let me unlaminate my fucking wallet and I'll...
But then once, you know, so your body's doing that. So even when you do return it to function and you get blood flow back through that area, all of that waste product dumps into an already sick central system and thereby creating more problems down the line. So if we can't find a distal pulse, even though it may do more damage, the amount of damage we could potentially do by returning that to POF mm-hmm. is going to be diminished other than losing the limb.
Right. So basically what it comes down to is, are they going to lose?
POF or nothing.
Yeah. Are they going to lose a limb?
Right.
Try. But otherwise.
Yeah. So, POF is good.
Yes. So there's a special kind of splinting also called traction splinting. And traction splinting is kind of like it sounds. It's basically you're pulling.
Put chains on the bone.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's going to get out in the snow.
Right.
But no, so let's take, for example, a femur fracture. That's probably the more common scenario where traction's used. Although it's also used in spinal fractures very commonly.
Mm-hmm.
But in a femur fracture, so the femur, I have a feeling most everyone listening to this knows, but it's your thigh bone. It goes from your knee to
and
your
the thigh bone's connected to the
hip bone.
Okay.
Hip bone's connected to the.
I asked a simple question.
Sorry. I wanted to go into the song. But anyway, so yeah, so your femur. So if you get something we'd call a mid-shaft femur fracture, that's just a femur fracture that's fractured in the middle. What can happen, what will happen is those bones will get out of place. So the reason that is your femur on either end serves as anchor points for your massive thigh muscles.
Thunderous thigh muscles.
Thunder thighs. But anyway, your thunderous thigh muscles. Thigh muscles are huge and they're strong
mm-hmm.
and they're giant rubber bands. And
boing,
so,
boing.
Yeah, exactly. And so when they connect to either end of that bone, if that bone breaks, what immediately wants to happen is those thigh muscles will contract because they're muscles and it will basically take the broken end of that bone, the part that's no longer attached to the hip, this would be the, I guess, the knee end or the distal end of that bone.
Which you can see is represented by Chris's right fist right now because he's moving it around in circles.
Well, actually, I don't intend. I just do that to keep myself on track. That's for me. It's not for you guys. That was between me and the microphone, Mark, and you just...
I violated that trust.
Jesus Christ.
Hey.
Sorry.
Calm down.
Jesus H. Christ.
There you go. On a bike.
I always say on a pogo stick.
Okay, there's no need to blaspheme on this show, okay?
Bikes are biblical, pogo sticks are not.
Exactly.
They call that the devil's stick.
The devil's poking stick.
Yeah. It pokes the ground, and that's where hell is.
Yeah.
We should start a church. But anyway, so what'll happen?
Very confusing theology.
So basically what happens is the femur snaps, and then the thigh muscles essentially just pull that broken end of the bone right alongside the other end of the bone. And what you end up with is two very sharp, pointy ends of bone digging into soft tissue around them. And well, it's excruciating.
They'll slide up over each other, shortening that leg.
Yeah. And it's pretty, I would say I've actually been on very few. I think I've been on at least three, but I think maybe four mid shaft femur fractures, in my career, which is not a lot.
No.
Yeah, I just haven't been in a whole ton of
them. Well, the thing is, it's a huge bone. If you've broken your femur, you either have some sort of medical condition that makes your bone brittle.
Yeah.
Or you got hit by something really fast and really hard.
Yeah, and I mean, it happens.
I mean, not only is it a very thick, strong bone.
Yeah.
It's protected by a lot of muscle, the aforementioned thigh muscles. Yeah. You know, so a lot of energy transfer had to happen to go through the muscle to break the leg.
Yeah. So one of the things we'll do is we'll pull traction. And basically what that is there's a number of different traction devices out there. But basically it's a device that it braces itself usually against the hip. And then the other end of it is usually tied down somewhere on the lower leg near the ankle. And essentially the part near the ankle stretches out. And it just stretches the bone back to its normal size. Well, it stretches the leg out back to its normal size. What that does is that drags those bone ends back to where they go. And it does cause a substantial amount of pain relief. Mm-hmm. While you're pulling traction, not so much.
Right.
Every time I've done that, it's been like, ow, 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 ow. And then
traction. Well, I can tell you something, that some of the devices are actually braced against the genitalia.
Yeah.
And when you're getting pain relief, bracing something against your genitals.
Yeah.
That should tell you how much pain relief you're getting off of this.
Now given, like, we don't just aim for a testicle. We do tell patients to go ahead and I don't want to push that aside, but there's still pressure there.
Right. And it's still a sensitive area.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you don't really, and we're talking.
It's right in the groin. So it's.
Yeah. We're talking 10, 15 pounds of pressure. I mean, it's not like a light push.
No. It's concentrated.
In the old, if you'll see them in TV shows or movies or something like that, not as much anymore, but in the old ones. And it was a complex pulley system with weights hanging off the end.
Oh, Lord.
And that's where that was traction.
Yeah.
You know, they could put 5 or 10 pound weights on the end of it. And by using pulleys to increase the strength of that, they would hold the person's leg in position.
Well, so in my career, I've used three. And this is the reason I knew it was at least three fractures is because I've used all three common traction devices.
Right.
So the first one is the hair traction splint. This is just basically a large... It's basically just like a large crutch sort of deal. It's got a pad that goes right like right underneath your ass.
Well, it's pretty quick to use.
Yeah. It's quick. The only, I will say, so for those of you that listen that know what a hair splint is, that know what a Sager splint is, I will say this about the hair splint. It's, to me, it was a stabilist and it did the best job.
Stabilist?
Stabilist.
Most stable?
No, stabilist. Okay. Anyway. Well,
I mean, as opposed to okay, you've got the very fast using hair.
Yeah.
Splint, right?
But
I like the slower tortoise splint, which takes longer to use, but you usually get the job done sooner.
This is just confusing.
It's a tortoise
and tortoise hair. Tortoise and right? hair. Yeah.
Because it takes you longer to use the tortoise splint, but it gets the job done sooner because the... Come on. That's good. That's
good shit right it there. It is. It's good. It's good. It's good.
It's a thinker.
I'll leave it in. We're going to leave that in. I actually cut very little on these things.
Yeah.
Which I think is actually
usually made a mostly show. What you cut is like us coughing.
Yeah.
Or where we just repeat something just wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Or the information is just like the aforementioned Doug Pfingsten, the lost episodes of Doug Pfingsten.
Yeah.
There was one where we were talking about the anatomy of the heart and all three of us fucked it up.
No. You two fucked it up. Got an argument with me. I remember this.
It's amazing how Chris was right when we don't have a copy of the actual.
No, I will find a copy now. Because I remember because we discussed this one of the few times where I was right. And I was very happy about it.
I don't know. It seems suspect without proof.
Anyway, well, I will find proof.
That's going to end up in the intro now.
Yeah, exactly. I will find proof. Anyway.
So, tortoise and hare splint.
So, and then there's the Sager splint. The Sager splint is also more commonly known as the crotch crutch. Basically, because it looks like a crotch, or it looks like a...
God. It's called the crotch crutch.
It's just a big penis the size of your leg. And
No, this is the one I was talking about, where it actually braces against the inside.
What part of the anatomy does that brace against? Okay. Is that
good Lord.
Large penis end that just...
So, it does not look like a penis.
Not at all. Well,
it looks like...
Robo penis. I don't know. It looks like a crutch.
Yeah.
It looks like a damn crutch. Yeah.
But this is the one that slides up the inside of the thigh, actually into the joint of where the femur meets the pelvis.
If you don't move your balls, it will crush them. Mm-hmm. That's where it goes.
Or your hoo-hoo.
Yeah.
So it braces against that, and then you pull traction against that. And again, the amount of pain relief they get from the traction splint is better than any discomfort you give them in the groin.
So I will tell you this. I personally... having used all three in the field, I found this. Then that one's called the Sager. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're not paid by Hare to advertise theirs, or Kendrick, which is the next one we talk about. But the Sager splint to me, I found to be the worst. I liked it the least. And the reason being is because, at least in this one particular time that I used it,
we're not being paid by any of these people, but we're now going to be sued by the
Sager. Right, exactly. Is that it wanted to walk back in on itself a lot. And I found myself having to re-pull traction quite a bit more than the others. Now, bear in mind, that's actually a normal thing to do with the traction splint, is to have to readjust it while it's being used. Mm-hmm. Almost all of them say reassess and readjust. I felt like I did that a lot more with the Sager, to the point that it was almost babysitting the damn thing. Other than that, it worked fine, and right. It was compact. But that's what I didn't like. So,
yeah. Then the last one is the Kendrick traction device, which I actually like.
Yeah. I like it too.
It's compact. Basically,
it's a tent pole.
It's a tent pole with shock cord.
Yeah.
Right?
That's it.
And so you set it out to be how much longer than the leg?
Like one tent pole length.
Right. And then this straps around the thigh and uses that tension. So you have a strap that goes around the upper thigh. On the outside of that is a place to slip in the tent pole.
Mm-hmm.
And then you run down, you put the ankle brace on there. And you pull it, you basically stretch it out against that tent pole.
Yeah.
And it's compact and easy to use in situations where you have to carry it somewhere.
Yeah.
It works great, I think.
Yeah.
I've always had tremendous success with it.
I've only used it once, and we did have to readjust it. I put that one to me, it's square in the middle for me between the Hare and the Sager. The Hare is still my favorite. The only thing I don't like about the Hare
is its size.
It's huge. And even, because remember, you and I ran on that guy who was horseback riding.
Mm-hmm.
That was our call. And that thing was a legitimate pain in the ass to get the guy out of essentially an outdoor area, mm-hmm. which really...
He was down a trail and we had to put him in a Stokes basket.
Yeah.
To get him out of there.
Which, of course, the one part of him that would not fit in the fucking Stokes basket...
Hare traction
split. Was that damn hare traction split. And that was a problem. But once we got him transporting, the thing was awesome. Mm-hmm. I didn't readjust. I think I readjusted traction once and I pulled maybe 5 additional pounds
right.
on a traction splint that pulls in 5-pound increments. So, right.
Yeah. It's,
so, one click.
It is very effective. It's just very large and very, it's not uncommon if you have a patient who's exceptionally tall to have to load them onto the gurney backwards to make room for the hair traction splint.
Yeah.
So they'll fit in the back of your ambulance.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we're marathoning here, so we're going to move on. So, hot and cold compresses. So, hot and cold compresses. So, Mark had talked about these earlier. So, our body responds to temperature in a variety of ways, and some of those responses can reduce pain. So, we're going to manipulate them just a little bit. So, heat. Heat's often used to treat pain a lot. You'll see athletes and people who have, like, arthritis will want to use heat.
Well, icy hot.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. So, heat causes vasodilation. Vasodilation is just where your vasculature gets bigger. Your veins pop out more, I guess is a nice way to put it.
If you want to learn about that, go to the cardiovascular episode of Medical Stuff.
And also, let's see, cardiovascular and...
Cardiac anatomy.
Yeah. Yeah. And then...
shock.
Yes. Boy, I'm useless in that.
Pretty much.
I pretty much just and odd and you fixed it. Thank you. Anyway, the body does that to regulate temperature, but as a nice side effect, it's also going to increase blood flow to the area of pain. That allows for the removal of waste, such as the buildup of lactic acid from when you work out, which causes that muscle soreness. Mm-hmm. And so this will allow the removal of that a little bit quicker, which will reduce pain.
That's why a hot tub helps after working out.
Hell yeah. It can also reduce elasticity, it can also increase the elasticity of muscle tissue, reducing the pain experience from muscle spasms. However, heat is contraindicated in some patients with recent surgery. Because heat can increase blood flow, recent surgery patients may be harmed by increasing blood flow. I accidentally wrote blood floor. Anyway, blood may end up on the floor. Near an incision, as that might promote excessive bleeding.
So after that, you have cold packs, which I think I probably use cold packs more for patients' pain than I do hot packs.
I think I do too.
Mainly because we don't really have hot packs. I don't think we have like lukewarm packs. And the cold packs are much more effective for getting cold.
Yeah.
The cold packs cause vasoconstriction, which is the tightening up of the vasculature. Yada yada, cardiovascular show earlier, yeah. which will inhibit the blood flow, but it also inhibits swelling. And pain is often caused by the swelling. And as the irritated tissue is pushed more into the irritated, this will cause pain.
Yeah.
Well put. reducing the swelling reduces mechanism causing pain relief. Like I said, the lady who fell the other day and hurt her back. Putting a cold pack directly on that spot helped.
Good.
Did more than pain medication.
Perfect.
Opioids.
What?
Opioids. in addition to this, the reduced blood flow causes restriction in nerve activity, causing a temporary numbness.
Cause a reduction in nerve activity.
Sure, whatever.
You said restriction, which I guess is kind of the same.
And so you had to point it out.
Yeah. Just sounded stupider when you said it.
So the thing about, really going to go with stupider in that sentence? Are you from Jupiter?
To get more stupider.
And then, you have to be careful when you're using either hot or cold. You need to...
Forgot I wrote that.
Well, if you're using heat and cold, you need to use it in a systematic way. You can't just slap an ice pack on there and forget about it.
Yeah.
They say usually, 15 of hot, 15 of cold, 15 of nothing.
Yeah, sure.
Sounds right. If you're going to do it for long-term use.
Yeah.
acupuncture. Yay, controversy.
I want to touch on acupuncture a little bit. So acupuncture, if you don't know, I mean, really? Come on. Everyone knows what this is. But anyway, it's where
needles... A lot of people know that acupuncture exists, but they don't understand what you're trying to accomplish with it.
Yeah. So basically, these needles are placed in the skin along meridians, air quotes. Or specific areas that are thought to relieve pain when the skin is lightly punctured. Many people swear by acupuncture. WebMD claims that, and this is, quote, study after study shows acupuncture works for some patients. That said, acupuncture, its pressure points, and its mechanism of action has never been proven beyond placebo in any quality double-blind study. In 2009, the British Medical Journal, which is literally the name of it, the British Medical Journal, which is a peer-reviewed journal, published a study that showed no difference in the perception of pain between correctly positioned needles and incorrectly positioned needles. Yet, there's been additional quality studies published in Pain, another peer-reviewed prominent medical journal that focuses on pain, showing that there is a difference between acupuncture and – where I wrote therapy, I should just say placebo. Anyway, there is a difference between acupuncture and placebo. However, due to no clear mechanism and no clear proven benefit and a risk of infection, that does actually happen because you are puncturing the skin, acupuncture is not recommended by NICE, which is the National Institute for Health and Care Excellence. They create evidence-based guidelines for medical treatment in the UK.
If they called it National Institute for Care and Health Excellence, it could be NICE.
Yeah, or NICE.
It'd be a NICE group.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, so yeah, it's not recommended just because there's no clear evidence that it works and the risk of infection's there. So it's not commonly recommended for relief of pain. So
this is going to be one of those. This is more of a alternative therapy.
It is.
You know.
Oh, it absolutely is.
Yeah. And I think pretty much you can disagree with me if you like. You do often.
Yeah.
If you do feel you get pain relief from it, and you're going to a place that legitimately is clean.
Right.
So they are, what's the word I'm looking for? Autoclaving.
Okay,
equipment. Autoerotic stuck in my head, which is something completely different. If they're doing that with their needles, if the music being played overhead sounds like a 70s porn film,
then hey, but you know what? If you get pain relief,
you know, I mean, if they're autoclaving their needles or they're using needles that are disposable or they're sanitizing them properly and you're getting pain relief from them,
who cares?
Who cares at that point? But yeah, the crux of that is, if they're cleaning their needles properly and they're not. Because the thing is, on some level, the needles are being exposed to blood.
Right.
And you don't want to be getting needles that are not clean.
Right.
So, not talking against acupuncture, I don't think. Mm-hmm. Were you?
No, not really. I just,
acupuncture is a bunch of punk-ass motherfuckers. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, no, I'm not really saying that. I'm just saying that...
There's been no real direct medical correlation, but the only correlation you see between pain relief and acupuncture, they believe, is more of a placebo type effect.
Yeah. Well, and I think one of the things to keep in mind here, though, is we did talk about how pain is now classified as an emotional experience as well. Mm-hmm. And that there is, especially when we talk about psychogenic pain disorder, there is a large component of pain that can be relieved by the perception of treatment. Mm-hmm. If we're talking about, I mean, it's all subjective perception. And yeah, and another thing too is, I mean, like, especially in psychogenic pain disorder where stress is a huge contributor, going someplace and relaxing can reduce your stress and can then therefore reduce the pain. And so it's kind of one of those things where I sort of boil it down to this is, personally, this is just me personally, I don't think there's anything behind acupuncture. It's baseless. There's no mechanism of action that makes any sense. The meridians don't make any sense based on anatomy. There's that. But I'm also...
We're going to get emails.
Fine. Don't email Mark. Email me. Even though it's the same email address. Same email address. But that's me personally. But here's the thing. It doesn't matter what I think. It doesn't matter what I think.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, right. But I mean, specifically this.
Have you ever tried acupuncture?
No, I haven't. Because
interesting.
Yeah. Right. Because it's one of those things that, if you have pain, whatever the cause of it, and you do something and that relieves the pain for you,
that doesn't create bigger issues.
That doesn't create bigger issues
like infections or blood to blood transfer.
Go for it.
Right.
Go for it.
And, I go do float tanks.
Yeah. What's that?
I go do a float tank.
Yeah.
You ever done this?
No, you don't. Tell me about it though.
It's amazing.
Yeah. You told me about it so much that I don't need to hear it again. I'm joking.
It's amazing. No, I mean, I feel better when I get out.
Yeah.
You know, can I tell you that there is a direct medical benefit of doing it? No, but I feel better when I go do it.
Yeah.
You know.
So who's to tell you don't do it?
Right. Well, you know? Apparently.
Well, no. Well, I specifically said I'm not telling anybody not to do it. I'm just saying.
Although the last time I went, I got out and I took my shower and I sat down. I'm like, I just lay there for an hour and a half. Why am I so friggin' tired?
Well, it's also one of those things that I think my natural – I have a natural distaste for any time.
Did you say distaste or distrust?
Distaste.
Okay.
Well, distrust as well.
Okay.
Any time that anybody advertises anything as good purely because it is ancient and it's been used for thousands of years, which acupuncture has been.
Right.
You know, and it's one of those things where – and like it's the appeal to antiquity – is what it's called. And
could you say this would be more of a philosophical medicine rather than a practical medicine?
Sure.
Well, I'm just asking. I have to get all shitty look on
your face. I didn't mean to get shitty. I was like, sure. I don't know. I just.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying. I am a firm believer that if there's something medically wrong with you, you need to go see a doctor and you need
definitive,
quantifiable treatments.
Right.
But there is a philosophical medicine out there of being at peace with yourself or being. You know, not decreasing the stress.
Yeah.
Decreasing the anxiety.
Well.
Decreasing all these things, which we do know. Too much anxiety, too much stress.
Raises blood pressure.
Raises blood pressure, creates more issues.
Well, and I think we're getting a little off topic, but that's kind of one of those things where.
I'm just seeing how mad I can get you.
I think I'm pretty mad. No, I'm just joking. I'm fine. But I think acupuncture It worries me, though, because I worry that
– like tape at night worry?
Well, yeah. I worry that it's one of those things that you have practitioners out there that are not necessarily medically trained. They're trained in acupuncture, but not necessarily in anything else. And anytime
the problem I have is when they try and give you medical advice.
Right. And to me, it's one of those things where if you're going to do acupuncture, supplement that with a true blue I went to college physician. Because it's one of those things where anytime you go to these alternative treatments, there's a reason they're alternative. Because here's the thing. When alternative treatments become effective.
It's because of Big Pharma.
No, fuck you.
there you go. Got a med.
Got it. Okay. He dropped an F-bomb. You know? But it's one of those things where it's like, look, I'm fine. If alternative medicine helps you out, that's fine. But please see a doctor.
Like it should be an adjunct, doctor. Not a replacement.
Yeah, because you got to understand, like, here's the thing. The moment there's an alternative – If something's alternative and then there's studies on it to find out that it has a true impact, a true mechanism of action, then it's no longer alternative. So that should tell you something about alternative medicine. All right. I'm off my soapbox. But anyway.
I'm going to disagree with you to some level. I think there are benefits of it.
Okay.
But I don't think that they should be replacement for traditional medicine. I think that taking care of the philosophical side of your being. Mm-hmm. It's just as important as taking care of the medical and the physical side of your being.
Right. But
it's
pioneered by people who aren't medically trained, and therefore you enter a danger zone.
Being a philosophical treatment.
Yes.
You're coming at it from a different angle.
True. But your philosophical treatment isn't going to cure your cancer, and it might overlook
I'm not saying it should.
I know. But
that's why I said it should be an adjunct, not a replacement.
It isn't going to – but my thing is it won't cure your cancer, and it might miss your heart attack. That's the way I look at it.
But if you're creating a healthier lifestyle.
Maybe you won't have a heart attack. As long as you're right. As long as you're seeing an actual doctor.
It should be an adjunct.
Everyone's in a blue replacement. And I think the problem becomes is when you start having the alternative health that tries to shun away the modern Western medicine.
If you go to an alternative medicine practitioner who actively tries to get you to not go to a traditional MD.
You got a problem.
There's a problem there. They should be willing to work with your MD about finding mm-hmm. solutions for you. Because as we were talking about earlier, the perception of pain, everybody's a little bit different. Yeah. I know we're dragging on here.
We've gone on this for about 14 minutes.
That's fine. Yeah. It's important, isn't it?
That's true. It is important.
So
well, and so the other thing
too. You got some place to be?
No. Yeah, here.
Your house.
Yeah. And one of the other things that I'll kind of throw in there too is as we look at this stuff. One of the things that alternative treatments kind of commonly do is they glom onto the reduction. So we talked about reduction of stress. And this is one thing I'll give alternative treatments. Almost most of them, a lot of them are based on some form of relaxation,
mm-hmm.
Yoga, acupuncture, those kind of things. Some form of relaxation. What's that?
Float tank.
Yeah. Float tank. Yeah.
You got to try it. It's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. I'm sure it is. Because it focuses on some form of relaxation. With relaxation comes reduction of stress. With reduction of stress comes in low blood pressure. And what a lot of alternative medicine practitioners will do is they will glom on to all the benefits associated with low blood pressure as something that their treatment does. And in a roundabout way, yeah.
But the thing is that you also need to go see a medical doctor because you need to make sure that that's being controlled in a good manner.
Right. And you actually need to make sure that, I mean, yes, relaxation reducing stress can lower your blood pressure, but that's also not the only reason your blood pressure could be high.
Right.
There's a lot of other reasons that could be potentially lethal.
Adjunct, not a replacement.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. Finally moving on.
Medications.
So medications. So
would you say I was right and you were wrong?
No.
Would you say you're right and I'm wrong?
Always. It's just a default stance. So medications. So past the physical things we can do, positioning and splinting, there's the meds. So first off, anti-inflammatory. So anti-inflammatories do exactly what their namesake states. They reduce inflammation. So we already mentioned inflammation causes pain by pushing irritated tissues together or into fractured bone ends or into implanted surgical devices. And a certain amount of inflammation is good. But too much inflammation causes you a lot of pain. I mean, think about that broken bone as we talked about earlier. And here's something I always tell patients when they do have a fracture is we'll start off, we'll splint. That'll reduce the pain. I'll maybe give them a little bit of fentanyl. I say, my pain's actually pretty good right now. I'm like, okay, let me know when it starts coming back up again. Because it will. Because what's going to happen is that tissue around that jagged bone end is going to swell. And it's going to push right into those sharp edges.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to hurt like hell.
Oh, yeah.
And so what?
Well, then you also get the wearing off of the chakras.
Not if you had the accident in a house that observes feng shui.
Okay, good point.
Yeah.
Good
point. Anyway.
Just trying to make you twitch now.
See, Mark's trying to see if he can raise my blood pressure. So anyway, So what an anti-inflammatory does is it reduces the pain just by reducing the swelling. It basically, essentially treats the cause of the pain. It takes the swelling back. So
have you seen the picture of these crystals on the knuckle duster? It says sometimes when a motherfucker just needs his chakras realigned. So some of the medications you can use, or be one of them, it'd be aspirin.
Yeah, super common.
Mm-hmm. Super, super common.
Yeah, so aspirin works by blocking, cyclooxygenases.
Anazes.
Anazi. Also known as, this is legit.
COX.
COX. So let's talk about COX. So
baby, let's talk about you.
COX is a category of enzymes that causes tissue inflammation. So it blocks the COX. Yes, I have been waiting this entire episode to get to this part. So it blocks the COX, and that helps. That blocks.
We just became 14-year-old boys again.
Yeah, it was quick. And that blocks the swelling. Ibuprofen is our common one. This blocks prostaglandins, which in turn then blocks the COX. Mm-hmm. And prostaglandin, by the way, not only causes swelling, but it also plays a role in delivering the pain messages to your brain.
Excuse me, sir. I've got the message for you.
Yes, go ahead. It's not the COX again, is it?
God, I can't stop that guy.
Anyway, and Toradol, and Mark already talked about Toradol.
He's just a dick.
Toradol basically does the same thing as ibuprofen does. It just does it a lot more.
Mm-hmm. It's the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory on steroids.
Yeah. I love that. So analgesics. So analgesics are medications that directly impact your body's ability to perceive pain. So this includes NSAIDs or anti-inflammatories. But some over-the-counter medications do not fall into the anti-inflammatory category, but are indeed analgesic. Tylenol. I didn't want to spell acetaminophen again, so I just got to acetaminophen. I just started typing. Mm-hmm. This also blocks prostaglandins, but it does not block the specific prostaglandin that causes inflammation, but rather just the ones that cause pain and fever. So this one is actually – so Tylenol is actually not an anti-inflammatory.
No, it's not.
It won't help with that.
I don't like Tylenol personally. I prefer NSAIDs.
For my fever, I love Tylenol. Hmm. But I will take ibuprofen generally for pain.
It gives you fever.
Bah, 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 bah. So, finally.
Bring it on home with opioids.
Here it is.
Full circle.
Opioids work on opioid receptors.
What?
And they mask the sensation of pain.
They also give you a euphoric feeling.
Yeah, and that's pretty much why these things are commonly abused. Mm-hmm. Basically, these will let you have a good time. Mm-hmm. So many opioids cause vasodilation as well. But opioids do not have – they don't cause – what the fudge?
Opioids do not have the anti-inflammation. Good Lord, we're falling apart here.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, opioids do not have anti-inflammatory properties.
They don't block the swelling. Let's go with that.
They don't. There is – boy, somehow something got deleted there. But anyway, that's okay. There is actually research –
the gaping hole in the middle of the sentence that is marked by the star.
Yeah, it's weird. But anyway, so there is a – so there's – so in your body, you have three opioid receptors, and that's mu, kappa, and delta?
Mu.
And most opioids affect the mu. And that's the common thing. There has been research into the kappa opioid receptor, which causes less of a euphoria and actually does have anti-inflammatory properties. Mm-hmm. But that is not mainstream. It's still developing. There needs to be more study on it. So that's not – this is not your oxycodone or any opioid that's currently on the market today.
I didn't see this anywhere in my notes.
I know. It was there. It's where the asterisk is now. That I just happen to remember that I typed it there.
Okay.
So yeah, it's not there. But anyway. So yeah, the controversy with opioids though is that they actually do little – to actually treat the source of the pain. So inflammation and the production of prostaglandin still continues in spite of the presence of opioids. As such, damage caused by excessive inflammation continues and can even be worsened by the fact that patients may resume normal levels of activity due to decreased perception of pain. So if you have swelling that's causing irritation,
right,
and you take an opioid, mm-hmm, that swelling doesn't go away.
No.
But you may not notice the pain, so you may resume normal activity, making it worse.
Right.
And so that's why there's a lot of controversy around opioids, because while they do mask the pain, they actually don't do anything for it.
Yeah, they just make you high.
Yeah, and so...
Well, I mean, how often have you told a patient in the ambulance that, you know, this probably isn't going to get rid of your pain, but it's going to make you care about it a lot less?
Yeah. Oh, exactly. That's what it does. It just masks
Mm-hmm. Thing. And so I guess, could you say that there would be a direct correlation to the opioid abuse problem and the fact that people are still feeling pain months and years later because we've never fixed the problem? We've just masked it.
You know, I didn't think about that, but that's actually a good point. Are we indeed causing more chronic pain?
Mm-hmm.
Because people are now...
Rather than treating with NSAIDs and proper treatments, we're just putting a Band-Aid over it so it makes the boo-boo feel better.
And here's the thing. I mean, Toradol or Ketorolac, same thing. I don't think it's going to do as good of a job as relieving pain at the moment in terms of the actual perception of pain. It doesn't. But what it does do is it reduces the inflammation.
I found that when... I mean, the thing is, we give Toradol and we have about an IV.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I've
only given it once. Yeah. And actually, I didn't give it. My partner
It can take up to 30 minutes to it. Yeah. So a lot of times when we start seeing the pain is when we're rolling in the door.
Right.
At the hospital, you know. And patients are not necessarily as happy because they didn't get that instant relief.
No, they didn't.
And medics are not as happy because we tend to be very result-driven people.
Yeah. They didn't do anything.
Right. Exactly. You know. But when it does kick in, I found for the reasons we give it, it kicks in very well.
Well, and here's one of the things to consider, though, is your body has pain for a reason. And pain is there to remind you. If your shoulder hurts. And
that reason is because life is pain.
Right. But, I mean, here's the thing. If you injure your shoulder, you have that swelling tissue, you shouldn't move it. It's going to irritate it more.
Right.
And so your body has a pain response to remind you, don't do that.
Right.
And so when we give an anti-inflammatory and we reduce that inflammation, we're going to relieve the pain somewhat, but we're also helping the problem. That inflamed tissue is no longer inflamed. Ergo, it's less likely to damage itself with movement.
The unflambéed.
But when we give narcotics, we don't fix that problem.
Right.
All we do is allow people to mask it. Yeah, well, and people, the warning system of, hey, don't move this, it's injured, goes away. So, anyway, that's all I got.
You got?
Nah, that's all I got, man.
No more mu, no more kappa?
I mean,
is there a lambda receptor?
There's always mu and kappa.
Is there a lambda?
I don't know why I tried to turn that sexy. It's not.
And it didn't work anyway because that was not sexy.
Yeah.
Any hoosers, if you want to get a hold of us, we are on the Instagrams at MedicalStuff52.
By the way, that's the shit I cut.
The stuff that makes Chris look like a douche.
Yeah, pretty much.
We're on MedicalStuff52 on Instagram. We're at MedsideStuff, MedsideE on Twitter.
And you choose an email at medical.
I was not done, sir.
Go for it. I was about to fuck up the email address anyway. Okay. So.
We're also on Facebook at MedicalStuff.
Yeah. And if you'd like, you can send us an email at MedsideStuff@yahoo.com.
So please send us your comments, your questions, any suggestions you have for something you want us to try and research.
Oh, also, if you do have any comments or questions, and you can also hit us up on Facebook. We are very responsive to those things. We actually love to respond to you guys.
Mm-hmm. Chris likes to jump in before I get a chance to answer.
Absolutely, because then we look less like idiots. Uh-huh. I'm just joking. It's actually probably the opposite.
So, thank you for listening, and we will talk to you soon.
Toast.